This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. On the heels of democratic revolutions in Serbia, Ukraine, and Kyrgyzstan, hopes were high for democratic opposition in Sunday's election in Belarus, often described as the last dictatorship in Europe. The dissidents used many of the same techniques of imagery, sloganeering, and mobilization pioneered by the Otpor movement in Serbia to topple Slobodan Milosevic. Those methods, since employed elsewhere to cultivate foreign media and subvert domestic propaganda, were to no avail. President Alexander Lukashenko was reelected with 83% of the vote. Even accounting for the widespread fraud reported by international monitors, polling represented something less than wholesale popular enthusiasm for democracy. But Andrew Miller, who reported on the election for The Economist magazine, says both the outcome and the political background have been mischaracterized.
I think the label "the last dictatorship in Europe," which is a popular one in the press, is a little bit misleading. The regime in Belarus is nasty and degrading and dismal for its opponents. But the truth is that Mr. Lukashenko, whilst eccentric and almost comic in some of his habits and his propaganda, is remarkably popular amongst people in Belarus for reasons which, this week, a certain poverty of ambition, a tragic poverty of ambition, you could say. He provides pensions which have increased slightly over the last decade and are paid regularly. And average incomes in Belarus have risen to the stellar heights of around $200 a month. But for people in that part of the world who've seen the economic strife in the neighboring countries since the collapse of the Soviet Union, those achievements seem much less humble than they do to us.
Well, notwithstanding the level of stability enjoyed by Belarusians, there's still the fact that it's an authoritarian regime, and the trend has been for those to eventually collapse. It certainly happened with Milosevic, and it happened in Ukraine with the so-called Orange Revolution. Why were democracy advocates so pitifully unsuccessful in the election?
I don't think it was reasonable to expect 200,000 people to come into the streets in the way they did in Kiev in 2004. But I think the opposition has achieved something in this campaign. They've raised their own profile. And if you look at what happened in Ukraine, there were widespread protests against the then Kuchma regime in 2001, which failed to topple the regime. But what happened was the opposition went away, learned from its experience, regrouped, took advice from overseas, came back a few years later and finished the job.
One advantage the Ukrainian demonstrators had was at least semi-free media that they could exploit. That's clearly not the case in Belarus. Give me a background, please, on the state of media there and what anti-government forces were able to do to subvert the propaganda.
The way that information, real information, circulates is not dissimilar from the late Soviet period. Small circulation publications which have to circulate surreptitiously because they can't be distributed by official channels. And as for television, I was there a couple of weeks ago on a day when a man called Mr. Kazulin, who was another opposition candidate, was beaten up by some of Mr. Lukashenko's thugs. And on TV, the incident was portrayed as a provocation staged by Mr. Kazulin in collaboration with conniving foreign journalists who were in attendance.
And of course, behind the vile myth, there's probably at least an element of truth. I imagine the CIA and Western NGOs and groups such as Otpor have, in fact, put some money and effort into helping create some sort of democratic opposition in Belarus.
Well, if they have, they haven't been all that successful. There were many differences with the revolution in Kiev. One of them was that there was a lot of money there. There was a big stage. There were rock bands playing every night throughout the standoff in the snow for a few weeks. There was free food and warm clothes for the protesters. It was a big, well-organized and very well-funded opposition. In Minsk this week, on the first night of the protest, which was the biggest night, the most important night, Mr. Milinkevich, the main opposition candidate, had to address the crowd through a sort of little megaphone. Most people couldn't even hear what he was saying. Now there's a little encampment in this square in Minsk. But it's nothing like the scale that it was in Kiev. And I think funding, you know, is definitely one of the problems for the opposition.
Belarus is not a huge country. There's something like 10 million people. And I don't know how high the stakes are perceived to be in the corridors of Western power. But do you think the international press has done a good job in covering what's going on there?
I think they have. And given that it's a small landlocked country which does virtually no trade with America, doesn't have a powerful army or nuclear weapons or anything like that, I think the coverage of it has been pretty good. And it's been important as well in the last few days during these protests in Minsk. were it not for the presence of quite a large number of foreign correspondents and especially television crews, it's possible that there would have been some nasty violence perpetrated against these protesters by the riot police who've been massing in the side streets around this square where they're protesting. And in the square, one of the chants that the protesters have struck up has been "thank you to the journalists," which is not something you hear all that often. And the journalists, of course, are partly there because they expect something nasty to happen to the protesters. So far it hasn't, and let's hope it remains that way, although, of course, journalists aren't going to stay there forever and will decamp, especially because there is an election in neighbouring Ukraine this weekend. So it could be that when they do leave, the riot police go into action. Well, they haven't yet, so that's at least encouraging.
Okay, Andrew. Well, thank you very, very much.
Okay, no problem.
Andrew Miller is a reporter for The Economist magazine. We spoke to him on Thursday. A few hours later, Belarusian security forces entered the primary encampment of democratic protesters in a Minsk square and took all of them into custody. Serge Popovich, a veteran of Serbia's Otpor movement, is founder of the Center for Applied Nonviolent Action and Strategies in Belgrade. He says the measure of the Belarus opposition's success is not this election, nor necessarily even the next.
One problem with world media is that they are only, you know, recording the final act. 500,000 people on the street getting inside the parliament and the television, and boom, Milosevic is finished. That was not that way. The nonviolent struggle in Serbia lasted for 10 years, and we had so many successes and failures in this struggle.
Of course, as we both know, the reason the press is not attracted to the process is because you can't take pictures of a process. You can only take pictures of an event. What do you advise democracy organizations to keep the press interested when there's very little of great interest to photograph?
There is always something to take picture of. And in Serbia, we were creating hundreds of small actions which were very, very good-looking and sending a very strong visual messages. And these pictures from these small protests, small public actions, street theaters, groups of women bringing flowers to the police, they were all around the world. So these small media victories can be achieved through very small, limited, low-risk, symbolic actions. And there are always good ideas for this action.
The Lukashenko regime is characterizing the protests in Belarus as the work of outside spies and agitators, that it's a conspiracy of the West to take away the Belarusian sovereignty and way of life. A message which I gather has had some resonance, especially in the rural areas. They're buying the propaganda. In some ways, the success of Otpor is coming back to haunt the activists in Belarus. Are your Belarusian compatriots victims of your success?
Well, this is the very important question. Every non-democratic regime is playing on the card of nationalism in a way that it wants to portray the democratic opposition as mercenaries and national traitors. Serbian opposition was not only labeled as the puppets of the West, but also in the last stages of his power as a terrorist. And you can see even the language is repeated by Lukashenko now, but there is a great lesson learned here in Serbia. To get to the people and to wash their brains from the state propaganda, you must play the card of patriotism. In Serbia, the main slogan of Otpor for months and months was that resistance because I love Serbia. And if you look to what people in Belarus are doing, it's pretty similar. I mean, look at the flags. These are very old Belarusian flags. Look at the Saturday, the day they pick. It's the anniversary of the old state. So it's pretty obvious that they're playing the same card to prove that they're a homegrown movement and they're working on a common good of the people of Belarus, not for the foreign interest.
The fact is, though, that Western governments and non-governmental organizations pour millions of dollars into burgeoning democracy movements, a fact that, of course, helps the local movements, but also gives the regime ammunition to portray the protesters as enemies of the state. How do you respond? Do you deny it? Do you embrace it? What do you do?
Regime will always do it, whether it is truthful or not. So you need to have the clear answer. The less secret you keep, it is the biggest possibility that you will create regime propaganda uncredible. One of the very important things for the movements in field is that they need to cultivate the international support. But international organizations, often with the money, are also trying to bring their own agenda, their own interests, and their own favorites in the battlefield. You need to learn how to avoid this, like we did in Serbia. If you are fundraising to international organizations, it should be strictly directed to your homegrown agenda purpose.
Well, Serge, thank you so much.
No problem.
Serge Popovic is founder of the Center for Applied Nonviolent Action and Strategies in Belgrade, Serbia.
I'm Ira Flato, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.